Hey, Fuzz.
How are you?
Oh, sure. He gets a normal hello.
He gets a normal hello. I still like the cut of his jib, though.
Okay.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. So I guess we can just roll right into it.
Yeah.
Episode 128, talking about Los Angeles. Let's talk about the ZLA. I think that's actually the area, like the air traffic control area, right, Seth?
ZLA. I think so.
Yeah. A lot of stuff happening. So LAX, some gate swaps going on there, some predicted growth for United, and then things happening.
Desired. Let's call it desired growth. It's unclear that it's predicted.
Yeah. Well, yeah, desired growth. That's a good point. And then
there's a phone number here for the ZLA Air Traffic Control Center.
Really?
Yeah.
We should give them a call. No, let's not.
See if they've got any comments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so let's talk about the gate swaps a little bit first at LAX. American is moving four gates to T5, and Delta will take over American's gates at T6 until they move to T2, T3, which is in,
right.
I guess that's sometime this year. Isn't that supposed to happen?
I guess they're supposed to start later this year. I mean, that's part of like a big renovation and expansion project over there, which is kind of amazing given how much money Delta's like just invested finishing the T5, T6 side. But
yep.
Right, they just built a whole new like entryway, didn't they?
Yeah, whole new entryway.
T5's
so, completely like gutted and redone.
But T5 gets gutted and redone every like 10 years. I mean, Delta's gone through so many renovations of that terminal over the years. That's just normal business for them.
When is it not in flux?
You joke. No, you laugh. But I'm kind of serious.
Arguably good for us as passengers, right? Always getting something new, although if like two out of every 10 years, it means it's under construction, which is not as good.
Well, that's all great. And they're in essence, putting lipstick on the pig because the physical space doesn't change.
Yeah,
that's
fair point. Still tight. It's still really tight in T5. Yeah, just like United's gates are tight.
Yeah. I mean, T4 and T5 and T6 and T7 are all very tight. T8 has a little more space, but it's a smaller terminal anyways. Because it only has gates on one side.
I was going to say it's only like half terminal, right?
Yeah, but the width of the terminal is the same. It's just they only have gates on half of it.
Yeah, okay.
Because the other half butts up against Sepulveda Boulevard. But the thing that I don't understand is, why is Delta giving up gates in T5? That's basically their dedicated terminal.
Oh, because they want to be able to move to T2, T3. I don't know. I feel like this is one of those games with like, you know, the little squares that you slide around and there's only one open hole and everybody's got to make everything work.
Well, do you think it's to make things more convenient for like American and Delta kind of agreed like, hey, let's move American will move over to T5, leaving the gate to T6 so that everyone can walk. Like it's easier, it's a shorter walk, right, between T5
for American
T4.
Passengers.
Yeah,
for American
passengers. Yeah.
But there's no benefit to Delta. They already have gates in 6. They have gates in 5. There's really no win for them to give up two. It's actually, if anything, more of an inconvenience because they've lost two gates in their prime terminal.
Do you think then that it was something brought on by the airport authority?
Like they said? That's the only thing I could think. I mean, why would an airline voluntarily give away two prime gates in its key terminal?
Yeah.
But then the question becomes, what clout does American have to force that? Because they've been using a bunch of gates in TBIT after they built the connector.
Yeah. It is a weird move. But, I mean, it's all temporary because it's all going to change and move to T2, T3 at some point. And that's when the low-cost carriers come over, right, Seth? Like they're going to come over to T5? T6. They'll come over to T6?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Is there space for local? I mean, half of T6 is Alaska at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
you got Virgin over in T3.
Yeah, I think so.
But they have to consolidate, and you've got Delta who's going to want to consolidate with some of its partners with the SkyTeam stuff, and Virgin Australia who's T2 today, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
I thought all the Virgin airlines were together at this point.
Okay. Well,
Virgin America
Delta's partner with both of with Virgin Australia and Virgin Atlantic. Obviously not Virgin America, but
right, because Virgin America moved from T6 to T3 to be with the other Virgin carriers, so now it'll move.
Okay, so then they're all in T3.
Yeah.
I don't know. I so rarely go to that side of the airport, with the exception of my JetBlue flights that are rare because I hate it.
T2 is all the carriers you would like that fall out basically. T1 is Southwest. T2 is if I remember correctly, Air New Zealand, Air Canada,
Spirit. Right.
Yeah. Hawaiian.
Allegiance in 3.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird, I mean, it's like a giant shuffling. It's like, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be the guy that has to put all this together for the airport authority. Like, who can't sit next to who at the table?
I don't think there's, like, a who can't sit next to who problem so much as, is there no space for everybody who wants a seat?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which sort of brings us to this discussion of United thinks they want to expand, according to Scott Kirby.
Yeah.
Right, there was an interview in, I think, Bloomberg publisher?
It was Bloomberg, yeah.
And him basically saying, we need to expand there, we need to grow, that's going to be, you know, a great place to make things happen, but no timeline, no detail on what it means, no detail. I think that's the key factor there.
Did the article have the mention of the potential T9 expansion there? Or was that just...
I don't know if the article did or if that was just something that came up on Flyer Talk or elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's been talk about them potentially building another terminal or taking over the regional terminal, American's regional terminal, which doesn't excite me much. But
if they built it, it would be in that same space, right?
Ironically, that used to be United's.
Yeah, true.
And but just like Six used to be mostly United and Continental, and they chose to give up some of it. But so here's the thing, because I was thinking about the Delta's alleged move to two and three. Two and three are smaller piers than the stuff on the south side. There's the depth there is much shallower. So I don't know how many gates Delta actually gains by moving to the other side.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure they gain gates. I think they gain basically the interlining and connections with the other partners. That's how I read the press release when they first announced it.
And, you know, they get new terminals out of it, which is all great.
Yeah.
But so from a capacity standpoint, it doesn't really help them.
Yeah.
And I've long said that of all the carriers, the best equipped for a hub at LA is United because they actually own two full piers.
Well, one and a half though, right? Because they only have.
Yeah. But that one pier is the same size as T1, T2, or T3.
Yeah, but part of owning it is you need to be able to put gates in it.
No, but I mean from a gate capacity.
Oh.
Because it's a longer pier.
Interesting.
Or it might be like two-thirds the capacity. But the ones on the north side, I think, are like 9, 10 gates at most, whereas the ones on the south side, I think they can get 14 or 15 on a full pier.
Interesting. It is shorter up there because they have the taxiway. The taxiway is closer. Yeah. I remember.
I count 9 gates on Terminal 8, according to Google Maps view.
Okay.
And Terminal 2 looks like it has... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 on the one pier.
Yeah, so on the Delta rendering, T3 and T2 have 9 gates.
So it's like a 1-for-1 swap almost.
Yeah. I mean, the reality
is... The current T3 has more than that, but yeah. I know that obviously they're planning to like make some changes.
Yeah, I don't think they have much more than that, because the thing about...
It's like 13, and it's got this weird like piers out, the spokes at the end. It's...
Yeah, but
and,
like, I don't think...
Tunnels almost that you're walking out into. I really, and JetBlue always flies out at like the end on the end of one of them. And I really hate it.
But I think that has to go away because it causes problems with the taxiways and the aprons.
Okay.
So I think that has to, I mean, the rendering is showing it as just a simple pod out there. But
makes more sense.
Exactly. So, but then which just let it, and the, I don't know how much you guys fight through LAX, but Terminal 8 is underutilized. I mean, they're using it probably at 50, 60% of capacity at best. A lot of their concessions don't even open up there most of the time.
Really?
Yeah.
But is that because they have trouble with the alleyway? Like, you know, pulling in. Some of those are pulling, like they have to tow gates, right?
Yeah.
Like the one right next to the club and stuff, like that isn't that a towing gate?
For the larger planes, it is.
Yeah.
But they could put regional planes on it. Because remember, Terminal 8 used to be shuttled by United exclusively.
Yep.
So they had 737s going in and out of there with no problem.
Yeah. I mean,
and then it became regional only, more or less, so they had even smaller planes going in and out with no problem.
Exactly.
I will say, if the LAX expansion, I don't know what it looks like. I mean, maybe they're just going to go back to what they had, which was the West Coast was pretty well served at LAX. So San Jose City had a flight to LAX. Portland had a flight to LAX. And then there was more frequencies to Seattle and Vancouver.
Carlsbad.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot more service up and down the West Coast. Maybe that's what's coming back?
But you also had things like
Carlsbad are going to struggle just because getting SkyWest to operate props anymore isn't really going to happen.
Yeah, I was kidding about Carlsbad.
I did it. I loved it.
It was a great flight. I flew out of there many times. It's like the flights to Ontario. They used to fly way back Orange County to LAX on Jetstream 31s. But things like LA, Philadelphia will come back. I think LA to some of the Florida destinations might come back.
Yeah. So, I mean, you think there's going to be some international expansion too, maybe? Some of the speculation on Flyer Talk was like they would bring back a European flight besides Heathrow, maybe like Frankfurt or something.
Yeah, but the Frankfurt flight, I just don't...
Frankfurt has a 380 from Lufthansa.
Yep.
And United flew that for a while. And, I mean, I was on it, but I just don't think the yields were there. Just like LA Hong Kong never really did well from a yields perspective.
Well, and I don't see the Hong Kong thing happening just because Americans now on that route. You've got Cathay. You've got... there was someone else out of LA. I think that might be it. But I just don't think... I mean, that's a lot of capacity to Hong Kong. And I know they're big cities, but is there really that much demand? I don't know. Then again, the Korean Airlines and Asiana fill A380s and 777s and 748Is to LA all the time.
Well, I mean, Delta's abandoning Taipei. Maybe they can start flying LA Taipei.
Maybe. We'll see. What else we got for LA?
Well, you're talking about the routes and, you know, international expansion. We've got American that got the Beijing slots, or the Beijing Route Authority, I should say. From the DOT, they were supposed to start up daily service. Seems like that's not going to happen right away.
China.
The Chinese Airport Authority company or whatever, their regulators that assigns the actual landing slots at the airports, declined to give American Airlines slots for immediate startup.
Wow.
And it's one of potentially several things. One of them is this was a request for slots outside of the typical IATA slot conference schedule. So, right, the IATA sort of coordinates slot request meetings for some of the major controlled airports. And typically at those, apparently, you know, the CAAC is willing to negotiate and talk and do things. But outside of that, it seems that you put in a, and this is something someone explained to me that I haven't really researched, but you put in a request for a slot and you either get a yes or a no answer, but no alternatives proposed. So like, instead of saying, hey, can I get 4 in the afternoon, instead of them saying no, but you can have 1 a.m., they just say no.
And then you have to reapply.
And then you have to reapply. So obviously America's not going to apply for like 18 of these, or, you know, the 6 that made sense for them, because, you know, getting all 6 would be a weird problem also. But no matter the sort of reasoning behind it, they couldn't get decent time slots, so they're not able to start the service. And I think the next slot conference is this summer for the winter 2017 schedule, which starts end of October 2017.
Wow.
So it seems like we're at least 9 months away from American being able to start that route, which of course raises all the challenges of a typical DOT route authority. You're supposed to start within 90 days.
Wow.
But you don't have the slots. And so United used to have this problem at San Francisco to Shanghai, where for their second frequency, and they couldn't get the slot times they wanted. And they basically kept petitioning the FAA to delay it because they couldn't get the slots. And those were accepted when I think American took over the LA Haneda from Delta at one point. They had a similar thing there where they couldn't get Haneda slots. They had the route authority, but they couldn't get the right time slots. And so they were able to, you know, delay it again. But yeah, I don't think there'll be any problems with the delay. I still wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Delta just for grins filed a complaint saying, if they can't do it, we should take the slot back instead. Like they seem to always do, but.
But I find it ironic that American now being picky about slots given the timing of the LA-Hong Kong flight, which seems like it's like the last possible slot available, and they still took it and did it.
No, I think it's unclear if American would have taken like a crappy 1 or 2 a.m. flight slot out of Beijing or not, versus they literally said, hi, we'd like this slot, and the airport said no. And then they're sitting there with their, you know, sucking their thumb, so to speak. They got nothing to do.
They
ran out of options. And so, you know, maybe we'll find out this summer when the slot conference happens that they'll ask for a slot, not get a good time, and then we'll really learn, you know, what their intentions are, right? If they only get a 1 a.m. slot, that's what's going to be an interesting scenario. But right now they literally were just given nothing.
Hmm.
Let's see if I can pull up the filing quote while we're talking. But
well, and on the flip side of that, so an interesting development was American then turned around and asked – is it the DOT? To not allow the renewal of Beijing Houston by Air China. So that authority, that route authority, is coming up, I guess, for renewal soon, and they're asking the DOT to deny it, which is interesting, given the current political climate.
Yeah. So that's the other angle on all of this. Is like, is it all politics?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll throw it out there. I'll just go there. That's cool. I think it very well could be.
Yeah, American's statement on this situation is on the 18th, the CAAC rejected American's request for slots at Beijing Capital International Airport. The CAAC did not as it had done in the past, even offer American slots at commercially non-viable times. So,
it was just a flat-out refusal.
Blah, blah, blah. To date, the CAAC has refused to provide any slots to allow American to exercise its bilaterally conferred rights. And so that's the reasoning they want to reject the Houston flight until such time as, you know, it can actually be reciprocal, which that word, tell you what, man, reciprocity is going to get us all in trouble one of these days.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting that they went after Air China's Houston route.
I wonder if that's the next one up for
renewal
as opposed to something else.
Yeah, it could be.
Also a little weird to me that, like, they come up for renewal. I thought they were just granted.
I thought so too, but then I was thinking about it. Like, it might have been we'd have to go back and find the Air China release on Houston specifically. It might have been, like, on a temporary basis. Like, we're starting this authority, like, the DOT's giving it to us as, like, a trial period and to see how we do. I don't know. Maybe. Or am I just blowing smoke?
It would be surprising to me. I mean, the only thing I can think of, it wasn't daily to begin with, so there's that. But, yeah, I'm skimming news here. I don't see anything that explains it very well.
Other LA stuff going on.
As long as we're still hanging out down there.
Yeah. Long Beach. Let's talk about Long Beach here. JetBlue's kind of getting screwed, right? They wanted to start some international service, and Long Beach is saying, no, not going to happen.
Yeah. Exactly. There was a study done, like a feasibility study, a financial study, all these things, and most of them came back saying, you know, this will make you guys more money to the airport. This will bring more passengers. This will bring higher landing fees, whatever, like, good, you know, longer trips, some better parking revenue. I don't know. There's all sorts of reasons it was seen as a good idea. And they voted no. The representative whose district it is essentially said, this just isn't the right time.
That's random.
Yeah. So.
Is this just a case of NIMBYism?
Mostly. I mean, that airport still has, I mean, terrible, noise control. Not terrible. They have strict noise control limits that recently they were able to increase the number of flights by demonstrating that the planes involved are much quieter than the ones used when the restrictions were originally implemented. Sort of the noise envelope of an MD-80 is much larger than the noise envelope of a 320 or a prop, E-90, any of those things sort of leaving. So they got a few extra slots added, and that's how Southwest picked up some new service. Southwest got 4, Delta got 1, and JetBlue got 2 or 3 maybe of the new slots. But JetBlue is basically comes back, and they brought it up on their earnings call last week. Essentially, it's a low-yielding airport, and we can't grow enough to make it a proper hub because there's the noise restrictions in terms of not being able to serve enough flights. They're capped at like 60 a day or something like that. So we can't make it a real hub, and we can't run the profitable flights that we really want to run, the international stuff. So
I wonder what that means then for JetBlue long term. You think they'll move maybe to San Francisco and push some stuff out of there?
I think one of the comments they made in the earnings call was essentially we don't want to build a different West Coast hub.
Gotcha.
And San Francisco would be brutal competition.
Yeah.
Southern California is bad, but at least it's separated out over a bunch of different airports.
they can't grow
at LAX enough to – they're not going to be able to run 60 flights at LAX. But no one wants to do the premium transcontinental Long Beach.
Yep.
I mean, what do you do, right? I'm surprised Burbank hasn't really taken off for them because Burbank has a lot of premium. It's the right market for premium traffic.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money around there. There's a lot of people who don't want to go to LAX.
But it's super short runway, right?
Yep.
I know it has some noise concerns with – that's one of the sort of like Orange County throttle and then coast on departure. Isn't it?
And not as badly as Orange County. I mean, I've done enough takeoffs from Burbank where it's a very different experience. You have to be you don't go full thrust, but you don't just basically mid air stall just as soon as you take off to cruise.
Yeah, that is the most awkward experience ever. If you've never done an Orange County Santa Ana departure, and you're into the sense of like weightlessness and feeling like the plane is going to fall out of the sky, you should try it.
Well, you know what I would say is maybe I should go talk to the Port of Portland and have them court JetBlue. We got plenty of gates and stuff. And
Twin runways.
We got 3 runways actually. I mean, it's
yeah,
we have a cross runway too.
But you only have enough snow plows for one.
Yeah, we can only plow one at a time. But I mean,
you could really have enough for one.
You know,
I had to borrow them from Seattle to do tandem plowing, didn't I?
pretty much. I don't want to talk about it. hey, you guys, your scraper
you
might
got
come,
there. Listen, you got there.
Your scraper might come in handy. We're supposed to get some more snow and ice this week.
Sweet. Solid investment. Right there.
did Jess like your present?
She laughed smirkily.
That's good. We'll call that a
yeah. What I was gonna say was, do you think they could move? Like, Long Beach is this third tier airport, in my opinion, as far as traffic and stuff. Do you think they can move to maybe somewhere like Sacramento or somewhere like that? That's maybe more out of the way, but possible to get a little more connecting traffic through it.
I would think that Ontario would be a better option than Sacramento.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think outside the box here.
Yeah, no, the real question becomes, at some point, are they going to actually really do connecting traffic?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things about JetBlue's business model that's so much different than the other carriers. They do 80 to 90% O&D.
Yeah.
It's like 80% for international, 90% for domestic. They connect very few passengers, which they do a bit more point-to-point flying, some like the Worcesters and the Albanys and some of those, even like Buffalo has that LA flight because whatever. But, you know, they do some more point-to-point flying, but that makes it harder in some ways also.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to build, right? You're generally not going to build a domestic hub in a corner for connecting flow.
Yeah.
And maybe they, I don't want to say give up, but give up on West Coast north-south runs and, you know, move their hub to Austin. Austin's pretty crowded right now. I don't know if that works, but they've got a little bit of density there.
Mm-hmm.
They already do some connecting flow through there on some east-west stuff. I could see some other cities trying to recruit them. Pittsburgh clearly has, you know, space.
and
the board's cutting off some of their terminal space, but like, do they have enough O&D traffic? Maybe, maybe not.
Do you think then that since they would get rid of some of that up and down the West Coast flying, you know, they've already talked about doing some premium, you know, the Mint service out of, you know, Seattle to Boston, San Francisco to Boston.
Yep.
So that, do you think that they would maybe expand that and then just say, you know what, we'll connect you on the East Coast? If you, it's rather than sending down to Long Beach and, you know, point you, you know, to wherever you're going on the East Coast out of Long Beach. Cause that's kind of how it works now.
Yeah. I think that, well, it really depends on your final destination, but yeah, I think that that's more viable at this point. I mean, when I was, you know, booking some of my silly trips, even trying to force a connection through Long Beach to get to some places was not trivial.
Yeah.
Depending on where you're trying to go.
Yeah.
So,
and then lastly on the Los Angeles area, news after 30 minutes of talking about it.
So a lot going on.
Santa Monica has gotten the permission to close in 12 years, which will pour one out for Santa Monica when that happens.
Really need to go get a flight out of there. I'm not sure I can afford it though.
Yeah, I mean, we need to do like some kind of like private jet thing or something. Maybe go take
it. Yeah, well, what kind of jet can take off on a 3,500 foot runway?
You could probably do it maybe with a Cessna Citation or something, like a short, one of the smaller private jets. Maybe a Phenom. Phenom could probably do it. They got a lot of horsepower. But really, you're a prop. You know, some kind of one of the props. So, yeah.
We could go to Carlsbad.
We could. There we go. Santa Monica to Carlsbad. I like it. I like the way you think.
Go.
It's one of the... So, the two sort of conditions on... Or of the conditions put it by the FAA announcing the deal, which was announced on a Saturday afternoon. So anyone else think that's a little strange?
Burying the lead.
You have to take out the trash and then some. They can shorten the runway from like 4,700 to 3,500 feet, but they have to keep it open and they have to keep lease space, you know, to providers and whatnot to allow them to continue to operate as per normal. But then like 12 years, at the end of 12 years, they can just shut it down hard.
Wow,
it was the whole thing. The whole thing about it is just a strange set of circumstances. Like 12 is a weird number to put on that. Why 12 years?
Yeah, the NIMBYism on this one reeks.
Oh yeah,
I mean
12 has a lot of 12 is divisible by a lot of numbers smaller than it, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. Is that why it's 12? I don't know.
The Illuminati had something to do with it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically.
It sucks. It sucks. I'm a little irritated by the whole thing because it's a cool airport. There's a documentary about how Santa Monica's played a big role in civil aviation and how civil aviation is so important, and we're losing it, and we're losing airports like this around the country. So I'm a little passionate about the whole thing. And it's sad to see it go.
I personally love people. You know, the airport's probably been longer there longer than most of the people who live there.
Yeah.
They move there, and then it becomes a problem, even though it was there when they got there.
Yep. I agree.
I never get that.
Well, I mean, yeah, anyway. We covered the lines. I was just going through my list. We covered the lines already. We were going to talk about L.A., Beijing, and Houston, Beijing. Kind of killed two birds with one stone there.
Nicely done.
Well played.
So the destination, Foz, you were in Aruba.
I was.
Tell us about Aruba.
Aruba was warm and lovely. It was a nice place to be in January. But wait, so one of the things that I've been to Aruba before, and it had escaped me. There was a little anomaly with the airport, particularly coming back. So you do your normal check-in, and then if you're checking a bag, they'll tell you that you have to reclaim your bag after you go through security. So I'm like, okay. And I wasn't checking a bag, but I saw people doing it, and I was just confused by it, whatever.
So it's, you go it's through a pre-clearance airport, right?
It is a pre-clearance airport. But so you go through security, and then you go, and you're in what I would call the non-US section, and shops, gates, what have you. But then there's a separate gateway to the US section. You then go through the US section, claim your bag, go through customs, check your bag back in, and then you have to go through passport screening and then security again. Which doesn't make sense to me, because out of all the other Caribbean airports, when you pre-clear, you don't have to do security twice.
Wow.
You do in Ireland, though, in Dublin, don't you?
I don't remember picking your – I don't think you have space to pick up your bags down there.
No, your bags get checked through, and I think they can – if they want to search them, they can like pull up a picture or whatever kind of thing.
Yep.
But you definitely personally clear security a second time, because we went through – last June, went through, bought some food, including like a bottle of water, and then had to dispose of it. They actually wouldn't even let us bring the food through, because technically it was a customs clearance point.
Yeah.
That was shitty. And like, no one tells you this before you go through.
And, I feel
like
there's nothing down there.
Yeah, it's bad.
No, I forgot Dublin. But what's the there's another one. I can't remember. St. Thomas, you have to go through customs, but you don't have this problem. But that's all U.S. Where else is there pre-clearance? There's somewhere else that I didn't have this problem. But it was a little weird. I'm like, what's the point of going? Like, if you're going to have a separate U.S. entrance, why even have you go through security the first time? Just put a separate entrance in.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was good to be down there. It was good to thaw out a little bit.
From Hamburg?
From Hamburg, exactly. And then, so I flew from there to
Chicago.
And
then you got some bonus time, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, not there, unfortunately.
Oh!
So, you know, I'm flying from there to Chicago. I was a little tired, so I slept for most of it. And we had no Wi-Fi. So when we eventually got over to the U.S., and the Wi-Fi kicked on, so I logged in, and I see all of you guys chattering about this United outage and going, oh, crap.
It's a good feeling.
Because I had a convection, because I didn't take the nonstop.
Yeah, you texted me and were like, hey, do you mind calling and seeing if you can get me on this other flight?
Well, yeah, and then at the same time, my onward connection was going sideways because the plane hadn't left San Francisco. This was even before the outage because it went mechanical. A United Airbus going mechanical? I don't know what the odds of that are, but they are high. Yes. But yeah, so my, you know, Chicago Newark flight was four and a half hours delayed by the end of it. Fortunately, I got on an alternate. But I mean, all in all, I have to say it wasn't so bad. We got in an hour later to the gate than we were supposed to. And you know, I got back on the ground on the East Coast about an hour and a half later than I should have.
Wow.
So I'm actually not that bad in the end.
No, not like my coworker yesterday who was flying from Milwaukee to JFK via Detroit and was supposed to be in at 9 p.m. and got in at 5 a.m. this morning.
Because of the Delta.
But didn't cancel.
Yeah, because of the Delta outage that happened yesterday. And this morning he's like...
They still haven't explained what went wrong, have they?
I have not seen anything.
Multiple other than automation issues, multiple system failures? I mean, have they said anything?
No, someone probably tripped over a router again, like, over the summer.
That was someone cut a cable, but yeah, power cable, but sure.
Well, yeah, exactly. Same difference. No redundancy. Who needs that? No, but it's funny. This morning, he's cursing. He's like, he goes, after all that, they offer me a $200 certificate or 20,000 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. Just like, it's not 8 hours late with a forced overnight in the air. I'm like, I'm thinking that's a little more than $200.
Yeah, he had a forced mid-con red eye. I mean, that's like not even a mid-con red eye.
Not even mid-con. What is it? Like, where did he spend most of the sit? In Detroit?
Well, that's the thing. And this is the part I didn't understand. He was flying from Milwaukee, and at some point he got rerouted to Atlanta. So I don't know if the Milwaukee to Detroit flight got diverted to Atlanta, or if they changed him on the ground before departure. So even though he's supposed to go to Detroit, he ended up in Atlanta, which, you know, that's
six what you get for buying a ticket on Delta.
Yeah, the six rings of hell.
The six terminals of hell. I mean, I have seen them cancel. They seem to be very cancel happy on the Milwaukee routes. They're just like, just leave that 753 there. We don't need it. So and they fly a 753 from Minneapolis, St. Paul to Milwaukee.
There's a lot of traffic coming that they old Northwest used to shuffle out of Milwaukee to Detroit, Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I mean, there used to be days when they'd fly DC-10s.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a 76 one there one day as like a relief, I guess, like a relief flight. They had a bunch of cancellations. So you should have told your buddy just to switch to the LaGuardia flight. They have a nonstop Milwaukee-LaGuardia.
Yeah, I mean, it was by the time I found out about it was this morning when he had already dealt with the whole ordeal.
Yeah. It seems like a common issue that's coming up lately. I mean, this isn't the first outage for either of these airlines in a year and a half?
All three majors have had an outage this year, right?
Yeah.
Well, Southwest too.
In the past 12 months, yeah.
All four.
Which is, it was crazy. I mean,
Sabres had a couple outages that have affected multiple airlines. I mean,
yep.
I'd like to say, like, you know, we're just so much more dependent on these systems these days, but the reality is the airlines have more or less been running the same systems for 50, 60 years. So it's not like we're more dependent on them. We're just very dependent on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, because we have a common friend who keeps touting the virtues of Amadeus and how great it is. But I guess the question, you know, is it worth it? You clearly pay a premium. You pay millions of dollars for the transition itself, and you pay them millions of dollars for the annual maintenance of it. Is it worth it?
Well, what is it?
Does it ever go down? I can't imagine it hasn't. That there's airlines that haven't. Are there? Are we saying that no airlines running Amadeus have had an outage lately?
I'm not saying that at all.
But you can say the same thing about switching to Sabre, and they clearly have had outages.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we all have worked in IT at some point, or do. These things aren't impervious.
Yeah.
Yep. Agreed. I'm glad you made it home, Foz, eventually.
Yeah, it was nice to get home eventually. Yeah.
A couple of other things. First, two things before we talk about the other stories we talked about. One, Seth, you sent this link to... There's a current United Mileage Plus auction going on for Polaris business class to fly on the first 777-300ER between...
And it's a preview flight.
Yeah, Chicago and San Francisco.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, and the current high bid is 241,000 miles.
With 6 days to go.
With 6 days. I'm just going to pass on this one.
Why? Seems like a perfectly good use of miles.
I love that there's a note that says no check bags. did you notice that?
I didn't see that part, no.
Carry on bags only. So if you're expecting for the first class treatment, by God, you better be ready to carry your own bags.
I guess the real question is, will they force you to go through the bag sizer?
I mean, just
it actually makes sense to me, no check bags, just from a perspective of how the flight gets handled.
True.
As a charter kind of operation.
Yeah, they probably aren't going to be like loading anything in the cargo area, right? For the most part.
Right.
It's interesting. It's economy airfare, domestic economy for two Chicago O'Hare, and then another domestic back from San Francisco. But you get Polaris business from between the two on the 777.
Oh, okay. I was going to say it's a business on the flight itself, but economy too.
Yeah, the preview flight is focusing entirely on the Polaris experience. So it's a couple hours in the lounge at Chicago, a few hours on board with, you know, food, and my guess is they'll probably have pajamas, but I'm not sure. The full bedding, the full kit, a full meal. And then, you know, by the time you finish the meal and recline, it'll be time to land. So you won't actually get to sleep, but I guess you could skip the meal and try to sleep instead.
I didn't realize they were selling the pajamas and the whole setup. they have run out of them, but they were selling them.
That's right. You could buy them for like a few thousand points, right?
I don't even know how much it was. They've sold out, so it doesn't say.
Oh.
I can tell you. Give me a minute.
Take home a piece of the United Polaris experience from A to Z.
Or you could just fly and just take the piece with you anyways.
Hey, and I want to offer a little bit of follow-up, a little FU.
Uh-oh.
So you guys told me that the amenity kits were the same size. So I have both now. I have the Global First amenity kit and the business kit. Global First amenity kit is a good 2 inches bigger all around than the business kit. And it's completely unnecessary because I could fit everything in it into the business kit.
Okay, the pajamas were only 250 points.
Are you going to start complaining about the size of your audience as well?
No.
Okay, just checking.
They were 250 points. I would
have got a lot of listeners. We got great listeners. A lot of listeners. It's huge, wonderful listeners. It's going to be amazing.
Huge.
Only 250 points for the pajamas. It's actually not a bad deal.
I would have bought them for 250 points, yeah.
Yeah, I would have done that too.
I wish I would have known.
Sorry.
Auction may be extended.
Around lunchtime.
Auction may be extended due to popcorn bidding. All right.
That means, but okay.
I didn't either. I had to hover over it. Anyway,
popcorn bidding.
Yeah, it's like bidding in the last minute of an auction. In the last minute.
Yeah, sniping.
Yep. And the other thing. So there's a picture on Reddit that got posted. My wife sent this to me. There's a flight. A Saudi prince decided he wanted to fly with his hawks.
I saw that.
80 seats.
It's like 80 seats, and there's 80 hawks popping their heads up.
What's kind of amazing about this, they're not contiguous seats. Like, there's people interspersed.
Yeah, like there's one in a middle seat next to a guy.
Did you see they built, like, platforms for them to sit on?
No, they're falcons. My wife just corrected me in a text message. They're falcons. She's listening in the background. They're falcons, sorry. Not hawks.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, what's amazing to me about it in some ways is the idea of flying with your falcon is not new. And especially in premium cabin, they've built like stands, essentially like a post with a bar sticking out of it so the falcon can, you know, grab onto it like a stick or whatever, or a tree branch. But this was way more of them and not nearly the same level of like fancy setup.
Yeah. My favorite comment on the Reddit thread is the person who replied, obviously this wasn't an economy on a Qatar Airlines. They have a maximum of 6 birds in the cabin. And he, like, posted the cabinet rules. Oh, man. Anyway, thanks to my wife, my beautiful wife, Jessica, for sending that to me, because I wouldn't have seen it otherwise.
She corrected me.
I mean, she's the producer. She's the new producer. She's the Rolo lookalike.
God, I hope not.
I've met both of them. So I'm going to go with no.
Yeah, exactly.
Iran Air and their A321, they're really putting that thing through its paces.
Yeah, they 7 flights a day,
and across the country, like all over the place.
Yeah, it's doing some, you know, drawing some great lines. It's the interpretation. I think it was it Reuters?
Yep.
That image is from. I'll put a link in the show notes. Sort of in the first 10 days or so, they've had this brand new plane. They are flying the hell out of it, essentially trying to show off that, like, hey, look, this deal we signed for cutting our nuclear program is worth something. We actually are getting these new planes now.
And so they're like showing them off to the citizens.
They're showing it off to the citizens. Like, come see our new plane. It's going to be at this airport on this day kind of thing. Turning the whole country into avgeeks. I like it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good stuff. And then lastly, Emirates. Seth, you were telling me about this pay for lounge thing that they got going on.
Oh yeah, we were going to talk about it actually in Hamburg, and we end up being silly and talking about other stuff instead. You can buy in now to the premium lounges in Dubai.
Interesting.
Yeah, you have to have your Emirates Skywards account set up, and there's some limits on it, but it's crazy expensive from what I hear. And so I'm pulling up the list here. $100 to get into the business class lounges per person.
Wow. Worth it? Worth it? I mean, if you're going through Dubai a lot, I guess, in an economy cabin.
But, I mean, when the domestic lounges are $50 a piece, is it really that expensive?
Nah, I guess not. Guess not.
I don't know.
Have you been to the business lounge, Seth, there?
Yeah.
Nice?
It's like basically it's okay. It's basically a full floor, like just above the main terminal area, and it stretches for a whole big part of the terminal. It has, you know, some nice food and some not as nice food. It has some champagne if you're into that sort of thing. And, you know, some liquor also, if I remember correctly. I think you get mixed drinks. You know, the things I need out of a lounge are like reliable Wi-Fi and access to lots of plugs. And that was less good, but eventually I made it work. Like I couldn't get a plug while sitting at a table and eating kind of thing. And that's just annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it goes. It's a passable business class lounge, with, you know, sort of hot cold food options, it's going to be better than many others, but in the, you know, than the US carriers historically have been, but like in the international realm of having a decent business class lounge and hot food, I'm not so sure it really stands out.
So maybe not necessarily worth the money unless,
you know, part of the challenge there is I don't know what other lounges are available if you're flying out of that terminal. Like, I don't know if there's a priority pass lounge or anything else that you could get into cheaper.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I didn't really spend any time in the terminal because I was trying to get a quick snack and get some work done and file a story before taking off on a red-eye flight. So,
yeah.
I was pretty heads down and didn't get a chance to walk through the terminal very much.
Yeah. What about you, Foz? You been through it?
I have not. I've actually only flown into Dubai.
Oh, like arriving?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I mean, it seems a little steep, but I guess if you're doing it a lot, if you're going to be going through there a lot, especially in economy or something, like you're traveling from the US to India or something and you're connecting there all the time, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, although if you're connecting there all the time, shouldn't you get status pretty quick?
You would think.
Well, I'm thinking it would be really practical for, you know, when you're going to some of these destinations where there's only one flight a day and you have like 8 or 12 hour layover.
That's true.
Right, and that might be the right market for that.
Sure. I could see that. Like, for the longer layover, it's essentially use it as a transit hotel, but without the beds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get a shower, get a snack.
Yep.
You know, sit in a corner and close your eyes for a few minutes kind of thing.
Can you sign up for this like online? Like, can you just like get the...
I think you just go at the terminal. I think you just do it at the gate or at the lounge.
Oh, nice. Cool. Sweet. Well, thanks for filling us in. I think that's a show. What do you guys think? It's about an hour. I think we're trying to keep it a little shorter, maybe. Give people a chance to listen to something else on their drive.
Are we babbling too much?
I feel like I am.
Okay.
We can talk about other stuff. We got time.
No, I just want to know what David's cooking for dinner tonight. Got a message from one of our regular listeners saying he enjoys listening to the podcast while he's making dinner. So, David, let us know what you cooked.
Take a picture.
He takes pictures of his food. It looks good. I've seen some of them.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for being on the show this week, guys. I think next show we might have a guest, maybe.
Ooh, exciting.
I won't tease it too much yet. So anyway, talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Take care.